Points win prizes in football, and although Mark Barron's debut as Reading manager didn't look all too different from Jose Gomez's Reading side on Saturday, they managed to grab that all-important winning goal after only 97 minutes at the Mad Stad. Welcome to episode 206 of the Tarlhurst End podcast. We find ourselves, of course, once again talking about a new manager, and that new manager bounce comes in the form of a 1-0 victory. And to do that with your host, Mark Mayer, today is Johnny Williams, who's making his own excellent return to the podcast. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, good, thank you. I thought, like Steve Coppell reappearing in the Medeski Stadium director's box, I might make an appearance on the esteemed Tarlhurst End podcast for the first time in a couple of years or so.
Near enough. I mean, you're still in the old prediction league, so we still have your memory is always alongside us in every podcast. But it was an interesting one, wasn't it? With how Barron sort of started, as your feelings of leaving the Mad Stad on 98 minutes, how would you sort of sum it up?
Confused. I think confused is the main one, because it was a pretty strange game. I thought it wasn't the highest of quality. Certainly by the end of the match, we were sort of getting on top, and Preston looked like they were happy to settle for a point. And so to get that last gasp winner was certainly, a really big bonus. And I think ultimately for Mark, this was probably, definitely a match that was going to define his career in charge of Reading. And luckily for him, when it goes in the record books, it was come off as a victory and the perfect start.
Yeah, certainly that feel-good feeling as leaving the Mad Stad can't be argued with when you get a last-minute winner. And certainly the sort of circumstances of the winner were quite interesting, with Obita's long shot falling to Miazga and a sort of powerful effort beating the keeper on the 97th and I think about 6th second it was into injury time. So we'll move on then into the recap, but before we do, just a quick thank you again to all our Patreon subscribers and to those who keep us ticking over with the sort of helpful tip jar that people send in, and everything's always really appreciated for that. And we're currently in the process of looking to expand into our sort of YouTube channel and to bring that out, and hopefully that's the sort of stuff where a couple of pennies here and there will go into making a big difference in the quality of the content that we publish. And also, speaking of which, although thankfully this didn't cost us a penny, we're going to be showing you, as we go into the recap, our new interludes, our new sort of beds between the sections, and these have been done very thankfully for us by former Reading announcer Paul Allen. So take a listen to those as we go through, and hopefully the quality of the production by myself is not too secondary school. So we'll move on then into the recap.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
So as the team was named then, Johnny, this sort of felt like Operation Continuity, which was kind of the reason that Barron said he got the job, was there to be seen, really. It was a 3-5-2. Pele sort of holding the midfield with Swift and Ejaria in front of him, and Puskas and Mate up top. As the game unfolded, was this, as it seemed, was this exactly Operation Continuity?
In terms of the personnel, you'd have to say so. It was a very similar sort of style in terms of the back three. You had Yedom bombing on, although not quite as much as he had done under Gomez. Certainly in Gomez's last few games, you'd seen so many times when Yedom basically was given absolutely no defensive duty, and teams would just relentlessly ping the ball in behind him, and you'd have one of their wingers on a centre-back. I think Bowen had clearly realised that teams were getting a lot of success doing that, and so held them back a little bit, but he still managed to get forward quite well. There seems to be certainly less passing round at the back. I know a lot of fans felt under Gomez that, you know, that was basically a quick way to get us under pressure and give the ball back, where we'd have sort of centre backs and the full backs and the goalkeeper far too involved at the back. And so, there are a lot more sort of long kicks and sort of getting rid when necessary. And I think, as well, an interesting thing was trying to provide Mate and Puskas with the service that they need. We've seen in the limited time that we have of Puskas that he's a pacey striker who likes to get in behind and he's got a bit of dribbling ability as well. He likes to get the ball and sort of run at the defenders. And so rather than leaving him isolated, there were a few sort of long balls over the top and round the corner in order to try and get him one-on-one with those centre-backs. And so I think tactically, certainly in terms of the shape and the personnel, it was pretty similar, but tactically it just seemed a bit more comfortable, a bit more right for the personnel. It felt I mean, you have to say on the day that Preston were really poor as well. So ultimately, yeah, that sort of played into our hands. But it just felt as though the team were more comfortable playing this style of football.
It seems to me then this just a bit more streetwise, really, and just a case of not being so. I suppose Jose Gomez wasn't stubborn to the levels of Yap Stam. Perhaps that sort of Stam stubbornness has shifted our stubbornness spectrum, because when you think of Gomez's style, it did change a little bit here and there, and we did sort of speed it up. But Mark Bowen sort of remarked after the game that he had told the players to hurry it up out the back, and that he may have overemphasised that a little bit. And that is, do we expect now to perhaps on that basis see it drop back a little bit and to actually sort of play the ball out a bit more in future games?
Well, I think you will. And ultimately, you know, if you go back through Gomez and then before him Clement and then obviously Stam as well, those have been three managers who have liked that sort of slow build up and passing it around the back and almost the modern way of playing football, really, in terms of, you know, if you have the ball, then you can't concede a goal. And, you know, let's build up slowly and try and sort of probe for a weakness. And I don't think you're going to be getting sort of long ball tactics from Mark Bowen. But I think in his first game, he's the first thing that you want is a sort of confident, assured performance at the back. You don't want any mistakes. You don't want any nervousness. And I think that was partly behind the tactics that he went with. And sure, I think with Gomez and the last few managers having built a team of players who seem more comfortable on the ball. You look at the likes of Ejaria, you know, Swiss range of passing, with Yedom and Abita, who are players who like to get forward. I think you will start to see it get more expansive. But I think ultimately, in a manager's first game, all he wants to do is not make any mistakes, keep a clean sheet, and if he can, get 3 points. And like you said earlier, that's ultimately what the team came out with.
Well, it was, as you kind of touched on earlier, a drab game, I think it's fair to say. Preston, I don't know whether we've given ourselves a bit of an illusion about Preston as to being a good team, but they're on a good run and in a good position coming into the game. It seemed a bit low quality, though, as were Reading. Would you say that that's kind of worrying, or is that just sort of typical Championship sort of stodgy football that comes out, especially with Reading, I suppose, being obviously under a new manager and not having ages to get used to his system and whatnot, but Preston as well maybe weren't at top form, really. And I suppose for me, I just put that down to a typical sort of Championship fixture where not everything comes off as players plan it.
It was strange, really. I mean, it was almost as though Preston did expect us to play in exactly the same way as we did under Gomez, and I think that's sort of borne out in the fact that Alex Neil, I think, made two subs after about 55 minutes, which, you know, sure, if you're 2 or 3 nil down and you're chasing a result, then that's the sort of dramatic impact move you might need to make. But to make that drastic a move after 10 minutes of the second half really suggests that he felt tactically that his team weren't performing. So I don't know whether, you know, it was our tactical shift and they'd set up or prepared in a certain way, expecting us to play a certain way, and we just completely nullified them. And I think that was possibly part of it. But yeah, it's like you say, Preston, for whatever reason, just seemed to have a really big off day. And I really don't remember Raphael making any or many saves, to be honest. There were a couple that were sort of straight at him, and Preston got the ball in the box a couple of times, but never really threatened the goal. And like you said, I mean, they'd only lost 2 or 3 games, and, you know, we're certainly high flying in the playoffs, albeit the playoffs are sort of quite tightly congested. You know, I think first down to 10th in the Championship is only sort of five point gap or something. It's, you know, it's really tight, but still you sort of expected more of Preston, especially with us in such poor form and seemingly sort of there for the taking. And so, yeah, I think it was as much about Preston playing badly as it was about us looking solid at the back. And, you know, you can't take away the credit from the team. They kept a clean sheet, but you'd never really say that there weren't any heroic defensive performances in there. There weren't any, you know, I think Morrison made a couple of sort of standout blocks and things like that, but, you know, there weren't any sort of heroic backs to the wall defending to keep those clean sheets like we were seeing at the end of last season when we were sort of hanging on for victories under Gomez. There was none of those sort of 8 or 9 out of 10 performances. It all just seemed sort of a steady 6 or 7, really.
But I suppose in a way there probably wasn't time for us to hang on to a 1-0 win.
No, quite, yeah.
When you score in the 97th minute. But I suppose in terms of individual performances, Ovie Ejaria had a good return to form, I would say, because he has been that sort of player who's dropped off under Gomez in the last 2 or 3 weeks, where I suppose the sort of game with Ejaria, he is going to be inconsistent, he is young, he is, when his main skill is his dribbling ability, if you just have that kind of off day, it really hits you hard. But there was a penalty shout. What are your thoughts on that? Otherwise, he went on, quite typically, he went on 7 dribbles in the game. Preston as a team only managed 2, according to the official stats. So I don't know your thoughts on whether there was really much of a penalty shout in that.
I don't sit behind the goal, so I can't exactly say. I mean, I'd have leant towards it was, but I don't know whether that's sort of just the home supporter bias. I guess on the opposite side, he was going down a bit of a blind alley and had no support. So maybe he felt that it was sort of the only option he had was trying to make that happen. I just love watching Ejaria play. I don't think we've had that good a dribbler since Glenn Little. And when you used to watch Glenn Little play, it was just mesmerizing the things that he could do. And it's the same with Ejaria, just the little touches, the little sort of, flicks around the corner, or the I can't remember the word, the spinny moves that he does.
Is that the Cruyff turn?
Kind of the Cruyff turn, and then the sort of just kind of spinning on the ball and getting it to a different area of the pitch. Mm. It's just the ability he has to sort of work his way out of situations, is stunning. And he had a couple of chances from the top of the box as well, which unfortunately for him were sort of straight at the keeper. For me, he was certainly the standout performer on the day. He's a spark of entertainment and a spark of sort of, of life in a team that's been desperately lacking goals recently.
Hopefully his knees can hold out a little bit better than Glenn Little's, because Glenn Little benefited from the fact that his knees were basically falling off by the time he played for Reading, because he could manipulate them in different ways. And that's Reading supposedly have a £3 million buyout on Ejaria, and you'd just like to think that as soon as the FFP sort of financial books allow us, that you would go off and pay that as quickly as possible. We talked about Puskas and Mate earlier. Sam Baldock and Danny Loder were the ones that returned to off the bench. We also had Charlie Adam come in. What was the benefit of Baldock and Loder coming on? Because we haven't really seen them under Gomez. The whole contract situation with Loder perhaps shows why, although to be honest, he is still a young kid, so we can't expect to see him too much. Sam Baldock's an interesting one, though, because his ability as a championship goal scorer is ultimately more proven than any other player that we have. And for him to be one of the ones that we tried to sell in the summer was kind of based on finances and not really his performances, which haven't been great, but no one's has been really. So to see Baldock back in the team, did you get a sense that he was, back in sort of form, or was he kind of not really in the game?
I mean, I thought Baldock in the sort of 20 minutes, half hour he had did more than Puskas did in the 60, 70 minutes that he had on the pitch. I think when Baldock, they're two different types of strikers. So obviously you can't expect sort of one to do the other's job better in a way. Puskas, like I said earlier, was sort of about running, trying to get the defenders one-on-one and trying to run in behind and ultimately, I think he had a couple of chances but didn't get too much success in that. Whereas Baldock was a lot more active. He was linking play a lot more. He was looking for the passes and people were running off him. And, I remember one where he sort of made his way back into our own half, won the ball and brought it forward and I think released sort of Loder on the left wing. So I think there's definitely a place for Baldock in the team and in the squad. And he did look very lively. He's obviously, got that experience, got that intelligence, and just has that sense of things going on around him, which I think, not typically of what was more of a poacher striker like Puskas, and probably like Mate as well. So I think there's definitely a place for him within the squad and within the team. As for Loder, he had sort of less of an effect on the game. He sort of put himself about. I mean, he still doesn't quite look like he has the physical strength yet. But you know, you can't forget that he's still only a teenager, so that will come with time. But again, I think with Loader, the problem that you have is if we were a team who was sort of comfortably mid-table, or you know, we weren't sort of in danger of in relegation, then you'd happily throw him in for half an hour a game or for 90 minutes and give him starts. But what you don't want to do is rely on that sort of player while we're trying to survive, basically. So I think it's admirable of Bowen to throw him on, you know, with 20 minutes to go when we were arguably chasing result, arguably trying to hold on for a result. But I think, you know, again, it will just take a bit more time if he's even here next season, of course.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And I'm not even sure Loader really knows what type of striker he is, or maybe he does know, but translating that into senior football is very difficult, especially against the sort of wily defenders as Preston have. And, you know, we're into the heady heights now of 19th in the table, when that's our first clean sheet since August. And how, you know, kind of looking forward over generally over the next few weeks, what is your sort of confidence with Bowen as manager? Because we've been here before with, I think there's some stat of our last seven managers or something have all won their first game 1-0. And it just feels like there's still a kind of a worry, I suppose, about Reading in a way. I suppose the thing is, when it comes to relegation fears, is that I was never entirely worried that we were going to get relegated under Jose Gomez, because we have that quality and we just needed a bit more sort of world wiseness and we sort of lift ourselves into a bit more mid-table or lower mid-table. With Bowen, do you think that's still the case? Do you think that he is someone who can sort of deliver that streetwise element that we don't, you know, because some games we were doing comfortably under Gomez and obviously we were unlucky with finishing and whatnot, but other games we were just completely out of them. I suppose what the thing that we need from Bowen is that we're not out of those games and that every single game we have a chance of getting a point or winning.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of tough to say because I'm sure we'll come into this in the news bites when we come to discuss his appointment, but we haven't really got much experience of him as a manager. And obviously, yeah, like we said, getting off to a 1-0 win is the perfect start for him, but it was a 97th minute winner in a very poor game from both sides. And so we can't say, I mean, you can never say after one game, oh, this is the manager who's going to take us forward. And so, as ever, you just have to sort of see after five or six games. But I think the good thing is that he does seem to be pragmatic. Whether that will develop over time, you'd assume that it will in the next few matches, and perhaps we might look to be a bit more expansive once we get the confidence up. Because I think the other thing is you can't forget that these players' confidence must have been absolutely through the floor. This was only our third win of the season. Like you said, first clean sheet since August. And we'd been hammered at home to Fulham the previous, or you know, 3 weeks ago, and lost at Bristol City. Credible draw at Swansea, but then, you know, losing at home to Blackburn before that. So this was a team that just needed that shot in the arm of confidence. And perhaps that's what's happened. And obviously the players jumping into the Eamon Dolan stand at full time, you know, doing a lap and seeing those smiles on people's faces again, it's almost tough to remember what that felt like. And so I think what Bowen, at least in the short term, has added is a little bit of confidence. And we've got two very tough away games coming up, but then the two home games after that are very, very winnable against Millwall and Luton. So, you know, I think as long as he can keep that confidence up and, like you said, not get battered in the next couple of matches, then I think the fans will at least give him a chance, and hopefully the players will give him a chance as well.
Yeah, hopefully we'll be talking about plenty of good performances next week, because we've got two away games on the horizon, as you say, with QPR and Forest, and I'm very happy that we're playing on Tuesday night, because you want that momentum to propel you into the next game as soon as possible. So let's give Mark Bowen his debut on the Tarlis Den and hear from his post-match comments, and then we'll go straight from that into your questions in the mailbag.
You know, I said the lads at half-time, 20 times later we've been for one reason or another, we've been chasing games, and then you're at a massive disadvantage. So even at half-time, it was a question of being patient, because I felt that at any time, called it wrong, because I thought, I said, look, if we get to 70 minutes and it's nil-nil, I'll be happy, because I know our fitness is good. I know the lads have got a strong desire to go and win the game. And I always felt as long as we've got that clean sheet, anything can happen in the game, especially the home side, of the fans getting behind you. And I noticed every time there was a transition to play, the last half an hour, the fans were, Sam Bollock's running forward or Danny Lord, whatever it may be, and the fans were right behind him, willing them on, which is a fantastic start for me.
Back the boys and make some noise for the Tilehurst End podcast. Come on, you Oz!
David Newell kicks us off for the mailbag then, and he asks, does Puskás deserve to start the next game? In my opinion, I don't think he does. Well, we sort of touched on the finer points of Puskás's performance earlier on. But Johnny, the starting lineup for the next game in terms of what strikers you go with, Lucas Boye wasn't in the squad for the 1-0 win over Preston. I suppose we don't really know why that is, but we'll take it as a sign he was injured. And then, as we said, Baldock and Loader are the immediate alternatives in that way. Lucas Shaw has been training in Dubai with our fitness coach all week. He's, we don't really know the exact details of that. Maybe it was reported, I just missed it. But if the alternatives are Baldock or Loader, I'm not sure that I would drop Puskás, because especially in a away game where we're going to be on the counter, I think that suits him a bit more physicality. QPR's defence isn't particularly quick, so I'd probably have to start him again.
Yeah, I think there's two things. One, I think it would be a bit embarrassing to drop your £10 million striker, but that's an argument for another day, I suppose. And yeah, I think, like you say, the good thing is hopefully that we will be able to counter-attack QPR. And I think with the pace of Puskás and the fact that he likes to run at defenders and he's a very good finisher, then hopefully this will be the sort of game where, as long as he doesn't get too sort of downtrodden and oh, the chances are never going to come, if he's patient and if he does sort of wait it out, then hopefully he will get those chances, because I do think that this is a sort of game, or the game scenario, that could really sort of play to his strengths. But like we said, the confidence of him is pretty low at the moment. Obviously, he hasn't scored in a good few weeks. I think he missed a penalty on international duty as well. And so we just have to be patient with him. And unfortunately, that's the only thing we can be at the moment. But like I said, I think the good thing is that Bowen, at least on Saturday, was looking to play to his strengths a little bit more, rather than the slow build up and sort of trying to get him playing the ball around and passing and getting him involved in sort of in front of the ball. He was trying to get the ball in behind, and I think that's sort of scenario that would perfectly suit him tactically.
And Scott from the States, only two questions this week for the mailbag. I suppose that's probably the one of the signs that we're doing this recording quite early on a Sunday morning to get it in before the Tuesday night game. And Scott from the States asked, what do we do differently to keep our first clean sheet in almost 2 months? P.S. USA, USA, celebrating Matt Miazga's winner. So with the clean sheet, I think this is really twofold. I think Preston, as we mentioned, weren't very good, had quite a bit of an off day. And secondly, I think with the passing around from the back, I think it just doesn't allow us to make as many mistakes in terms of the teams that come and high press us. And I think particularly these things have happened at home, because when teams come away to us, they don't tend to really sit in for the draw. I haven't seen many teams sit in for the draw against us for a long time now. So the fact that we, allow high pressing teams a bit of an entry route, closing that off has proved quite successful in this game.
Yeah, and I think ultimately, with the problem with the high press that teams did against us was inevitably we would panic. And I think unless you are a team that has players of the quality of, say, Manchester City or Liverpool, then it's very difficult to play your way around that. And I mean, OK, so I remember a couple of goals from last season. There was one in particular where who was the goalkeeper who had Emi Martinez sort of got involved, and we played it literally from our own 6-yard box and counter-attacked and scored. I think Swift finished it off. I can't remember the game exactly. And so you will get those. But then it just seemed, especially with a team that is low on confidence, they would inevitably, it would come to someone who would just sort of hoof it clear, and that would be the end of it. And ultimately, you're hoofing the ball clear, and you don't have anyone in position upfield. Whereas at least if you're hoofing the ball clear and you know you're hoofing the ball clear, then you've got players who are making runs that they're likely to get on the end of, and you're sometimes putting the opposition under pressure as well, rather than the opposition being completely in position and waiting for you to get rid of the ball. And so, yeah, like I said earlier, I think it was just a bit of sort of back to basics. And I'm sure that Mark will bring in some tactical nuances to his style of play once he's had a few more weeks on training ground and things like that. But yeah, it wasn't an outstanding defensive performance. Preston were very, very, very poor. I think it was just sort of that perfect recipe, really. And obviously, USA coming up with the 97th minute winner.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've had that chance to really go with him. Miazga's probably not been as good this year as he has been last year, so hopefully that sort of thing that can kick his confidence on and move us forward. One thing we haven't talked about yet is the slightly controversial, so we say, manner of Mark Bowen's appointment. So let's hop into News Bites and discuss how we ended up where we are.
Stay tuned for all the latest from around the Medeski Stadium and the Championship with News Bites.
Bowen in and Gomez out. So I suppose the last time we had a podcast, we discussed Jose Gomez being sacked and the idea of Mark Hughes being appointed. Instead, we've ended up with Mark Hughes as long-term number two. And in interesting circumstances, for those who are not quite aware, Mark Bowen arrived as a technical consultant late on last season. And I suppose that coincided with us being very good and staying up. He was then appointed a sporting director in the summer. And I suppose you could say, again, oversaw transfers and scouting and whatnot. So you can judge whether you're a fan of that based off how well our signings have done. And now he's manager. And the notion, Johnny, is that he sacked Gomez, then appointed himself. that has been denied as probably a bit too on the nose, really, as a notion, I suppose. What were your sort of thoughts on when that notion was floated that he was responsible for the sacking and the hiring?
It certainly doesn't look the most clear of routes to a management role, does it? Or rather, the most transparent. I don't think that he would have been involved in that. However, you know, I mean, shout out to friend of the podcast and former Reading postman Charles Watts, who I think sort of pointed out that Mark Bowen at some very juicy odds would have been a decent shout to take over. Gamble aware, hashtag gamble aware. And sort of, you know, a week later or so, lo and behold, it did happen. And so, look, I don't think it was that sort of bent, if you like, in terms of how it happened. And I think, in a sense, we maybe have to be realistic now about the stature of the club in terms of the level or type of manager that we can appoint. I mean, sure, you can say someone like Mark Hughes, and I know the fans were massively against him, or Chris Hughton was another name that was sort of dreamt of in terms of maybe he'd be, but these are managers who, you know, like them or loathe them, are lower premiership / top championship managers. And Reading, for what, 4 of the last 5 seasons have finished in the bottom 6 of the championship. And look at where we are now, where we were 22nd, I think. So we're simply not in a position, I think, to be attracted to managers of this caliber, even if we are throwing £10 million at strikers and you know, £5 million on Joao and Ejaria, etc. And so I think in that sense there would have to be a sense of realism. And you know, it wasn't like when we appointed Steve Clark, when, you know, within 24 hours of who was manager before Clark? Is it McDermott, I think? Within 24 hours, Clark had been appointed. It was that quick. And I think even with Gomez, there were a few, certainly a couple of weeks before he got appointed. So it's clearly taking us a lot of time now, because for whatever reason, we're not attracting the right type of managers or managers of sufficient quality to go, right, stop the interviews. He's the guy we want.
But that is my problem, see, because I did see a suggestion that some people on Twitter had said, oh, the idea that we had been seeking out replacements for Gomez before we sacked him was wrong. But I think that's exactly what you should be doing if you sack a manager. You should know who is going to come in. And I think it was Swansea in their sort of heyday, if you like. They knew that as soon as Brendan Rodgers went, they wanted Michael Laudrup as their manager. And that was the plan. They went and did it, and everything worked out pretty well for them. The idea of Chris Hughton, I think he had turned down Stoke a week before us, by all accounts, I suppose, in the last 10 years, a bigger club than us. Think about at Brighton, how much money he'd have been on. You know, let's say, what do you reckon, like 30 grand a week sort of thing? Mm-hmm. We can't pay that. Gomez would have been on maybe a sixth of that, or maybe a third of that. And Mark Bowen won't be on anywhere near that much. For him to come down into the Championship, you probably have to pay him about five times more than we're paying any of our players. It's just not going to happen. But as I say, my real problem with the way that we went about it was, it's quite evident that the owner made the decision to sack Gomez, and then everyone turned up for work the next day and said, right, who's going to be our new manager? I don't think that's how you should be going about doing it. I think that leaves too big a gap. I think we really suffered last season from that sort of 3-week gap where we had Scott Marshall in charge and dropped some pretty important points along the way. And then you end up with a sort of... We basically ended up with a sort of case of minimum disruption, and it feels like a sense of you'll do Mark Bowen. And I suppose when a team is doing well, that feels a lot better because you just bring someone else in. I think when Dean Smith left Brentford last year, they put his assistant in charge. Hasn't gone perfectly, but it was sound logic. Does the logic behind Mark Bowen stand up?
I think if he had previous managerial experience, then you'd say yes, just about. But then there's two arguments that I'd make to the contrary with that. Is one, the team has not been very good, and two, the recruitment has not been very good. I mean, aside from the loan players, the big raft of loan players that we got in towards the end of last January, when we got in the likes of Baker, Ejaria, Miazga, Martinez, the recruitment has not been very good. You know, you'd have to look at Puskas and Joao and say, are they worth the money that we've paid for them so far? Not quite so sure. I mean, yeah, we did things on the cheap initially. We're bringing in Morrison, who I think has been sound, and Charlie Adam, who, well, has been in the squad. But yeah, the recruitment has not been very good, and the results have not been very good, and the mood around the club has improved under Gomez. Yes, but then sort of bringing in Bowen kind of disrupted that a little bit. It's difficult to say that this was the right move, because I guess to minimize the disruption and like I said, to not spend 2-3 weeks sort of chasing another manager, because look, you can only go for the people who are out of work. If not, you'd have to go through compensation packages and interviews and blah blah blah. So, you know, I guess to just get on with things. And it's like I said earlier, with it was Nigel Adkins who was manager before Steve Clark. Just looking now, and I remember this distinctly, Nigel Adkins was dismissed on the 15th of December. Steve Clark was appointed on the 16th of December, so the very next day. And Steve Clark, I think, had been on holiday on the 15th. So very clearly, they identified very quickly that this was the person that they wanted. And, you know, luckily enough, he was keen to take the job on. Whereas in this case, obviously, it's Reading will have invited applications, and maybe they've just seen, well, do you know what? There's no one of that standard that would take us to the next level, or would definitely be, an upgrade. And so this is what we have to do. I mean, Bowen has enough coaching experience, yes,
yeah,
but
yeah.
And you know, again, another argument that we've seen. You know, you look at the likes of Pardew and you look at the likes of McDermott when they've come in under very little managerial experience before, or, you know, senior managerial experience or no managerial experience, and they've done very well. But I think that's a different situation in that they were, you know, they were caretaker managers. They sort of took over for a week or two, see how you do, and then they were given the job.
And while McDermott was caretaker, he beat Liverpool, didn't he?
Yeah, and even McDermott wasn't really getting results. Everyone looks back now, and it was basically that Liverpool result that got him the job because nothing improved in the league.
Yeah, we got particularly spanked by Plymouth, didn't we?
Yeah,
terrible performance.
So I mean, it's not as though. I mean, has it been confirmed that Bowen is only till the end of the season? So you know, maybe
I think
it is.
So
maybe it is the case that if he does well, then they've clearly made the right appointment, and we can carry on and everything will be hunky dory. But yeah, I think whilst it's admirable that you'd want the minimal disruption and the most continuity, like I said, it's not as though Reading were left in a good situation by Gomez's departure, or at the time of Gomez's departure. We were, you know, arguably in the worst position we've been in years.
And I guess it was telling when, as you say, when Clark was floated as replacing Adkins. I think as a fan base, I think we all tapped into that and said, yeah, that can work. Let's have him. He's just come out of West Brom. He was unfairly sacked there. Good assistant manager sort of history. Let's give him the job. When Gomez was sacked, obviously a lot of fans had kind of focused on the sacking rather than thinking about who's going to replace him. But there wasn't really a name that everyone really jumped on and agreed on. People said Hughton, but we've covered why that was unrealistic. After that, I never heard a name said that is the guy you have to go for.
Mm. I mean, even the likes of, if you're looking to carry on the feel-good factor around the club, I mean, I'm probably going to get shot down for this, but I think now would have been the perfect time to appoint someone like Murty or Parkinson. If you're looking to sort of keep up that feel-good factor around the club, the connection with the fans, blah, blah, blah. I mean, Parky's obviously just gone to Sunderland. You can say what you like about his style of football and his level as a manager, but certainly in terms of keeping that connection with the fan base and hashtag the Reading way that we seem to be loving at the moment, you know, that would have been a good one. Or Murty, who I think is, you know, still in some sort of capacity at Rangers, and I think you know, it was rumoured or reported that he had interest in the role as well. You know, that could have been the perfect time to, because you're taking a chance on them as much as you're taking a chance on Mark Bowen. Mark Bowen obviously has years of experience as a number two and knows the club for the last 6 months or so. That's, you know, but has just as much senior managerial experience as Murty and less than Parkinson. So yeah, like you say, there was no standout candidate or no sort of unifying candidate, aside from the fact that everyone seemed to be unified that Mark Bowen was the wrong candidate.
Yeah, it's funny when you go back and see the Jose Gomez announced sort of tweets and Facebook statuses and the reaction to that. The reaction was generally, no idea who this bloke is, but I'll give him my backing and we'll see where things go. And people were basically, the reaction for Bowen is, I have no idea who he is, I don't like him. And I think it's a touch unfair, when you compare the two of them, it's a touch unfair to say Gomez gets my support and Bowen doesn't, because at the end of the day, he's the manager of the football team. And like it or lump it, he's here until either the end of the season or for longer, or until we're basically on the verge of relegation, we sack him and try someone else. So, you know, I just think that this is the reality now. The process of bringing him in has a lot of questions to be asked, but let's face it, has this club really done anything in terms of running itself properly or brilliantly in the last couple of years? You can argue no. Funnily enough, as well, just as a final point before we go on to the rest of the news bites, I would say two of the people with the best CV suited to coming in, who were both available, were Alan Pardew and Nigel Adkins. And Adkins was supposedly interested, bless him, which I find that a little bit adorable, that Adkins was interested in coming back.
I mean, and equally, like you're saying about there being no standout candidate, I think When you bear in mind how much people sort of hated Adkins when we left, oh, this, you know, smiling man, he's just ever eternally positive. I think we got hammered 5-1 by Birmingham in his final game, and he said, oh, we still played well, and you think, oh, did we really? And then, you know, fast forward sort of 4 years later, and oh, you know, actually Nigel Atkins might have been a decent appointment. It's really as time as a healer sort of thing.
If only Nigel Atkins had the foresight to be Portuguese, then we might like him.
Well, actually, I thought by the end, one of my hot takes is that Gomez was a bit of a sort of Portuguese Atkins with his sort of eternal positivity, and even the letter, the sweet little letter he wrote at the end of his tenure, I think that could have been penned from the desk of Mr. N. Atkins by the end. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see. And like you said, I think everyone's going to get behind Bowen now, especially with that win. I think this was underrated as how important a match it was yesterday. I think if we'd lost and put in a bad performance, then obviously that would have been catastrophic, not only for Bowen, but I think, you know, for the team as well, from a confidence level. And so at the very least, to get off to a positive start, even if it wasn't a vintage performance, is all you can ask for.
Absolutely. And before we go on and talk about the upcoming QPR and Forest games, we'll just update you, as we always do in News Bites, with the peripheral teams of Reading FC and how they've got on over the weekend. The under-23s, they drew 2-2 with Colchester in the Premier League Cup last time out, having lost 2-1 to Middlesbrough in the Premier League Division 2. They play Aston Villa at Adams Park on Monday the 28th, next up, so you can get yourself down to that if you got the Monday night free. They're currently 7th in the table. The under-18s beat Villa 2-1 on Saturday. They then go there again on next Saturday the 26th for the Premier League Cup. They're currently 9th in the table of the Premier League sort of South Division. And the women, they beat Everton 3-2 last time out. Jade Moore with the brace and Lisa Marie Utland with the winner. They play Luiz in the Conti Cup. After we record the show on Sunday, so you'll probably know the result by now. Then next Sunday, they go to Manchester United in the WSL, where they are 7th in the table at the moment, but they've got a game in hand, and I think it's a pretty winnable game in hand. So you could say that it's a good start to the season so far for the women. And you look at the table as well, I've noticed there's not been many draws this season in the women's top flight. So hopefully Reading can go on and pick up some more wins and get into the sort of upper echelons of the league. And speaking of pushing forwards and getting into the upper echelons of the league, let's go in now and discuss big game preview.
There's another huge game ahead for the Royals, so be loud and be proud for the big match preview.
Two very different games ahead of us this week, Johnny. QPR are very high scoring, quite inconsistent. Nottingham Forest conceded just 3 in their last 5 at home. So if we're going to have that sort of pragmatism we've been talking about over the episode, then Mark Barron has his work cut out, because you can go all guns blazing against QPR. You might concede a couple, but might win. Forest, on the other hand, a bit of a different proposition.
Yeah, and Forest have only lost one game all season as well. So, both of them are going to be extremely, extremely tough games. I think Forest play Wigan on Sunday as we record, so that could be out of date by the time you listen, dear listener. But yeah, I think these are two sort of shots to nothing. The one thing that you'd say is that the last thing we want is to get battered in games like these. After building up that confidence, or at least getting a bit of a feel good factor around the club with that win on Saturday, at the very least, you want to sort of hang around in these games. And, you know, if you sort of lost 2-0 or 3-1, then that sort of, I think would be acceptable. And we have to accept that, you know, this is the level of the club now, is we're likely to be battling relegation. If we can pull ourselves into mid-table by Christmas, then I think that would be a very good result for the team and for the side. I think you just got to, I think Bowen will set the team up in a similar way, try and hit them on the counter, like we said earlier. And if we can get Puskas to get a couple of chances and hopefully grab a goal and get him to kick on again and show why we paid £10 million for him, then that'd be pretty ideal right now.
Well, and QPR are probably the ideal team to be facing in that. As I mentioned earlier, the defence just looks quite slow, and they've conceded 4 goals in their last 2 games, but they've won both of those while scoring 7 in that time. So it'll be testing for us. And And they've got five of those goals in the second half, so don't expect too quick a start at Loftus Road. 7:45 p.m. kickoff on Tuesday. That is Forest. As you say, they can go top if they beat Wigan well later on today. So I think, you know, two draws or a win and a defeat seems to me like a pretty good week out of these two results.
I think, being honest, I'd take a point. I'd take a point from either of these, bearing in mind it's a rookie manager, and bearing in mind that, you know, the level of play that we're at, and, you know, framing it in the context of the fact that we've got two very winnable home games coming up as well, on the schedule against Millwall and Luton, two teams who are, you know, only 3 points ahead of us as we stand right now. I think you can go down a certain amount of games and say X amount of points from X amount of games would be good. But I think I would take a point from either of those. Certainly, if we could get a point at QPR, I certainly don't expect anything at Forest, because they're on a real roll at the moment, and, you know, they've not lost. So I think since the opening day of the season, actually. Just checking that. Yeah, opening day of the season, they've not lost since then. Again, notwithstanding this Wigan match. And then come back for the two games at the Mad Stad, and if we can get two wins from those, then, you know, then we're on at least sort of 17 points, and hopefully pulling ourselves at least temporarily clear of the relegation zone.
Well, it's funny, isn't it? Because this weekend, Middlesbrough aside, and obviously Wigan haven't played yet, every team in the relegation zone picked up points. So it did, and we obviously won as well, and Millwall almost won, and Luton did win. They're 17th and 16th now, and Blackburn got a point, Brentford won, and the bottom half teams are experiencing that almost typical October bounce back, because you can only be so awful for so long in this division. And I think going to QPR, I think we just have to hope they have a bit of an inconsistent day, as Preston did, and going to Forest again, you've got to hope that these teams, probably not promotion favourites to begin with, you hope to, by this time of the season, be able to unravel some of their flaws and put them into action. So in terms of predictions, I'm going to jump in now. As I've built up a lead in the prediction league, so I should probably be going first. Only Handbags got a win on the weekend, so he's pulled away from Sim, who's bottom on 2 points. I've got 13. And then yourself, Johnny, second with Wim on 6 points. So I think for QPR, I'm going to say a 3-1 defeat, because I think going to, you know, a difficult away game like this can expose any cracks that we have in our game. And I don't expect Mark Bowen to have had all those sorted out so far. QPR obviously on a bit of a high. And yeah, I think being a bit realistic, I think we'll get on the score sheet. But if they continue to play as well as they did on the weekend and the week before that, then I think it'll be very difficult for us to get anything from it.
Yeah, I think we can't expect Mark Bowen to set the world alight now with this Reading team. I'll go for an optimistic 2-1 defeat, as I realise that even at this early stage, I need to start making up points on you. I was going to go for the 3-1 and reprise my role as the 3-1 bandit, which I think Handbag seems to have taken over in every single game so far. I'll go for 2-1. Like I say, if we can keep it tight and keep it sensible and not make any mistakes, I think. Yeah, like I said, I think Bowen's tactic is just to play risk-free football, or at least minimise the risk in some of the football that we play. And so if we can do that, maybe nick a goal, keep it tight, then who knows, frankly. We are eternally optimistic whenever we get a new manager, and then inevitably 5 games in, it's all sack the board.
Well, let's see how long this honeymoon period lasts for, because if it only lasts for about 3 seconds in injury time for the Preston game, then yeah, who knows what sort of discussions we'll be having. But that new manager bounce is underway, I suppose you can say, and this podcast will be back for probably the Sunday evening or the Monday lunchtime of the week after to discuss those two away games at 7:45 in West London on Tuesday, then 3 p.m. up at the City Ground on the Saturday. So back the boys and make some noise if you get the chance to go to those games. And thank you very much, Johnny, for popping by for this chat.
No problem. Anytime.
And we'll be back in a week or so when we'll have a bit of a better gauge on Mark Bowen as a manager. So far, Operation Continuity has been completely ended by getting a win. So let's hope that Reading can push on now and take some momentum on the road with them and come back to the Mad Stad in a week's time with a bit more comfort and a bit more security and go and push us up the table. Until then, thank you for listening and come on, you Arse.
You smile, funny how the crumbs always